Clubhouse.
Frisky
Fridays.
Frisky
Fridays in February.
Amp up your romance with Frisky Fridays in February.
Selections from the classics and tried and true favorites.
To brand new binges and sci-fi love stories.
We will have you snuggling on the couch every Friday in February.
I'm Mike Caputo. Welcome to Love It or Leave It, the show where we have a roundtable discussion to work out the good, the bad, and the ugly on the latest TV shows and movies. All to help you decide, should you love it or leave it? Today, we're discussing Netflix's newest streaming venture, Bridgerton. Helping me unravel this horny period drama is Pod Club House's very own Ashley. Hey, Ashley, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy to be here.
I don't think we've seen you on the Clubhouse. You haven't been around the Clubhouse since Lovecraft Country was the last series you did for us.
Lovecraft was a blast. We had a great time this summer with Sean and Aisha, and I'm looking forward to talking about Bridgerton today.
Oh my God, it's gonna be a fun ride, because also joining us today are two of the wackiest people we know, definitely some of the funniest, Kristen and Will from the So I'm Watching This Show podcast. You guys are Leoli staples. You guys are always helping us out with these love it or leave it. Happy New Year's. Happy New Year's to you both, you YouTube stars.
Not yet. Not quite yet.
Any minute now. Any minute.
You are to us. You are to us. You're. When I put down, do you know any famous people? I'd be like, well, I know these YouTube stars. There.
Our episode 5 of Bly Manor really rocketed into the stratosphere.
It did. That was the only one, though.
Bly Manor was awesome. I could only imagine.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're talking about the haunting of YouTube stardom. That's what you're talking about, really. Oh, guys. All right. So we're here today to talk about Bridgerton. It's a new series on Netflix. 8 episodes, came out Christmas Day. It's inspired by and based on Julia Quinn's best-selling set of Bridgerton novels. The first season of the show basically follows the first book in her series. It's from Shondaland, but not a Shonda Rhimes show. And I think that's an important thing that I definitely want to talk about later. It's actually the first project in Shonda Rhimes' giant $150 million production deal with Netflix. It was created for television by Chris Van Dusen, who is a Shonda Rhimes acolyte and protege. We're going to get into the synopsis. I want to give you guys the official synopsis, and then we're going to start talking about the show, because I have questions that I don't maybe understand why people love the show so much. And I'm hoping you guys can all help me out here. Because I usually do love Shonda Rhimes shows. And I think that's where like the confusion was coming in for me. I was like, oh, damn, give me some scandal. Give me some grace. I mean, scandal especially.
It's there.
I don't know. I think this is like scandal smoke, but no scandal fire. But anyway, all right. But let's go through the synopsis, and then we're going to jump into the show. All right. So Bridgerton. It follows Daphne Bridgerton, the eldest daughter of the powerful Bridgerton family, as she makes her debut onto Regency London's competitive marriage market. Hoping to follow in her parents' footsteps and find a match sparked by true love, Daphne's prospects initially seem to be unrivaled. But as her older brother begins to rule out her potential suitors, the high society scandal sheet written by the mysterious Lady Whistledown casts aspersions on Daphne. Enter the highly desirable and rebellious Duke of Hastings.
Hey.
Committed bachelor, the catch of the season, the only man with 46 pack abs, and I mean, he's just the cat's meow. Despite proclaiming that they want nothing but the other has to offer, their attraction is undeniable and sparks fly as they find themselves engaged in an increasing battle of wits while navigating society's expectations for their future. I did not write that. That is Netflix's official show synopsis.
I was going to say, very good for someone
who's flattering. Thank you.
I just came up with that off the cuff. I was feeling inspired.
Well done.
Thank you. I'm taking a bow. It's an audio medium. You can't tell, but I'm bowing here. Thank you. I guess a threshold question. Have any of you guys actually read the novels, or were you familiar with them? Because the novels have been around since, I think, 2014. Were any of you aware of them?
Not at all. I wasn't.
Me neither.
I just happen to love a period drama.
Same.
Especially anything, you know, BBC British Regency era. And so that's what I was attracted to at first. And then I saw the outstanding casting that was done. So that was it for me.
Are you guys are into the bodice ripper romance novel genre generally at all?
Generally for me, absolutely for Kristen.
Yes, yeah. All the time. Anytime, all the time, whatever you want to give me where someone's wearing an empire waist and someone else is wearing a waistcoat, I'm there. Yes. I'm in it.
I prefer a slight edge to mine, so sort of the 2019 Emma or Crimson Peak, and this fell into that category for me. I was into this.
And I like that you answered for Kristen. It was very Anthony Bridgerton of you.
No, he knows. But he was correct, and Anthony Bridgerton was rarely.
I mean,
he is a guy who cannot find an ocean if you dropped him in the middle of one. He could not find a cup of water. He is
all the wrong moves.
He is a moron. I want to talk about representation, the person of color representation here, because in this version of Regency London, the show is playing up Queen Charlotte, who many historians think may actually have a biracial mixed heritage past. Mm-hmm. Going way back, if you look at her ancestry line. So here, they've actually cast Golda Rushevel as Queen Charlotte, a Black woman, to play that role as King George III's wife. She is the one kind of running the kingdom while King George is suffering from a debilitating mental illness, which eventually leads to his death in real life. Spoilers for history people.
Right.
And so in this society, people of color are able to ascend to levels of nobility. Now, we see that in the Duke of Hastings and Simon's character and his father's character, played by Jean Page. I think the show actually doesn't really ever talk about race, really. I mean, there's the one scene in, I think it's the fourth or fifth episode, where Queen Charlotte talks a bit about how the world is set up the way it is to kind of explain it. But otherwise, it's a pretty colorblind show. Ashley, I'm going to come to you first with this one. Is the show doing a disservice because it doesn't spend more time talking about it, nor does it really show other people of color and the struggles that they were actually having in the real period at this time?
I'll start off by saying that I don't agree that it's colorblind per se. I think the focus is more about access, but it's very subtle when the discussion happens around Daphne's role for her family. So that's kind of starts the conversation around, well, if I make a good match, then it gives all of you access. And so from there, there's this conversation about how Queen Charlotte is sort of the catalyst for accessibility to the noble class or the upper class, the ton, so to speak. And so I don't think it's colorblind. My friend Sean Martin, who I've done a few podcasts with, he said, it's repainting history with the diversity that exists today. And I really like how he said that. We were having a conversation offline about it. And we both agree that it's not incompatible with acknowledging the history, British history, whether it be, you know, slave trade or any kind of social injustices that were taking place. So I don't think it's colorblind. I think the focus is about access and how in a community, one person, in this case, a Black woman, can be the catalyst. And it's about imagining a world where that makes it possible for everyone to get free. And so we sort of see the Black folks, the folks of color that are really acting nonchalant because they about that life. Like, we up here, we in here, like, it's okay, right. Be good. Like, we're not in, you know, in a traumatic situation because we recognize, and everybody has sort of acknowledged it. And I love it because it's like, what if we could get there sooner? You know, what if historically we get to imagine, like, what if we got there sooner, you know? And I love that about it. So it's really about accessibility for me. I know I have friends who disagree and who have other thoughts about it, but I thought it was gorgeous in the way that it gave us sort of this ability to imagine a different world.
I thought it was fascinating. I was a little bit thrown at first because I didn't know how exactly the show was going to go about it. I didn't know if they were going to address it, which that tends to be my preferred method is if you're going to blind cast, then just do it. And I very much believe that if you give people an option, they'll take it. And so it's like if you give people the option to like disagree, then they'll be like, well, maybe I do. And so there's something kind of awesome about just sort of being like point blank, this is the reality, you're either here or not.
Yep.
I was nervous when, because Kristen watched it before me and she said they were going to explain it, and I was like, oh, that opens a bag of worms. Like
yeah.
I was like, because suddenly you're bringing logistics in, and it's something that the show did once or twice where I was really thrown when they made the decision to put a date on the show. I thought that's going to confuse me because I'm immediately trying to imagine where the Americas are, like is, and I kind of wish I had preferred it was just sort of like an alternate reality. However, the handful of times, especially I thought it was Lady Danbury that sort of explained the story about Queen Charlotte, and she just sort of hand waved it very elegantly to the point where I was like, oh, okay. Like, I think if Julie Andrews had been like, once upon a time, I would have been like, okay, this is
100%.
Not.
100%.
Yeah. But the fact that she just sort of hand waved it away, I was like, oh, okay, I can handle this. A huge thing, it's the whole representation matters. Just being able to see different types of people speak and act and dress in a way that has so... it's just been standard that this is white. You know what I mean? And I think it's sort of, it's a real sort of palate cleanser where I'm like, oh, and like you said, Ashley, there was a point where I was like, we could have been doing this the whole time. Like, this could have been just reality. Like,
right.
When I should clarify, when I say colorblind, I think I actually was saying my thought was the same as you had, Ashley, was that it wasn't that it was ignoring color. It was just, it was past it.
Gotcha.
Because for me, it was set up the same way that Schitt's Creek handled homosexuality, where it wasn't an issue. They just dealt with it. It was almost post the discussion of it. And the way this show is almost kind of post-racial, where somewhere prior to the show beginning, they had already had the discussion and the struggle. And there's never a conversation. Anthony never objects to Daphne being with Simon because he's black. It's because he sees him as a scoundrel, as a rake.
He's a rake, yep.
Though I've read criticisms and I've read some African-American authors criticizing the show where maybe they feel like there's like a below the surface. Kristen, before we move on, what was your take when you kind of saw this world?
Well, so when I first saw the trailers and everything, I thought this was going to be like an alternate universe. Like we've all just discussed, this is just something we could have been doing the whole time, and we're doing it in the guise of like, it's just a random Regency era type of universe where, you know, like you said, this racism doesn't exist. And then when I got into it and I was watching it and I was like, oh, this is real stuff that happened in the past. It was a little bit strange, but it also was just so nice. I was just so into it. And I think it opened up a lot of opportunity for, you know, a different kind of story being told. And also all of the Queen's amazing natural hair wigs were like giving us both so much life while we were watching it. It was incredible. Incredible.
Well, she had different ones though. Like she had ones that were standard Marie Antoinette, and then she had one where it was like dreadlocks with like the rings. And I was like, this is so cool. Yes.
So overall, I ended up really liking it. And I do think it is, you know, like Shakespeare, productions of Shakespeare do it a lot. I don't understand why we can't just be including actors of all races in these productions. It's all for acting and it's all just for fun, and just do it. All it does is make it more interesting to me. Especially if you put it in this, you know, this sort of post-racial utopia, you can just have so much fun with it. I think
totally agree. And I mean, think Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda. It was groundbreaking, and it was kind of like, duh, like why haven't we been doing this already? This is fantastic. You know, and I'm so glad. Yeah,
I did want to compare it to one other thing that actually really frustrated me with a like a historical fiction bent, which is the Ryan Murphy show Hollywood that came out over like earlier this year, because there was something about that that felt so disingenuous, where this show just felt like this is, you know, we could have had it all kind of a thing. And the Ryan Murphy show just was like, no, this woman won an Oscar in the like 40s. And I'm like, that's just not it's not true. This is just sort of like an alternate.
Well, because Ryan Murphy reality. Has to have it all. You know exactly. what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, Caroline and I actually covered Hollywood for Pod Club House. That's much more of an Earth 2 setup. Whereas it starts here, and then the show quite explicitly says, what if we do it differently? It's not taking the approach that we had reached this post Harvey Weinstein Hollywood in the 40s.
Yeah.
It's no, Hollywood is shitty. Harvey Weinstein's existed every age. But we're gonna imagine what would that look like if it was different. Not to defend the show or knock the show. It was, I think, a very different approach here. This show is actually taking a little bit of a nice little historical figure with Queen Charlotte and lining up wonderfully with the Regency age and spinning out a very post-racial show. I think Hollywood is doing a thought experiment.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I prefer that it's taking this one real historical figure and spinning the world out from her. Like, what if she did have a mixed race heritage, which right. you know, there's not a whole lot of ways to actually fully know that, unfortunately, but I think that that's the thing, is they took one specific thing and spun the whole thing out from there, and then you are able to do the heavy lifting yourself. But I think Ryan Murphy does the heavy lifting for you, and that sometimes makes it suffer.
If we had dwelled on it any more specifically, then I think I would have started picking at it. But
also, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it also allows you to just enjoy a larger palette from which to paint with. For me, like, the standouts are Paige as Simon and Adjoa Ando as Lady Danbury, the two of the three main people of color on the show. Their performances kept me much more engaged than everyone else combined. Mm-hmm. I found the Bridgertons as a lot. Very bland, very, very white paints on the walls.
You mean you couldn't distinguish between the three brown-haired, handsome sons?
You could not.
Honestly, I mean, we're joking about it. And let's get into casting here. All three Bridgertons, Anthony, Benedict, and Colin. Colin less so.
Gracious.
I was just like, wait, he was just fucking the singer. Oh, no, now he's fucking the seamstress? What?
What's going on?
He's trying to bone Marina? What? Where? This guy is getting dick everywhere. He's just getting it. He's just
like, no,
getting
it. Three separate human people.
He is slinging it. I was like, how does this guy find time to hydrate? Good God. I was like, oh, no, shit, that's three different human beings. They were so nondescript.
First three episodes, I was like, my kingdom for a blonde. Like, I was like, just throw something in here, because it was just like pretty brown haired person. And I was like, I have no idea who any of you are. But yeah, I got there. I did. But
oh, his sideburns only go down halfway through his ear. The other one's sideburns go down fully through his ear. So that's how I was lining it up.
I'm just thinking about it. I love the contrast between just the plain white cast and the colorful, vibrant black folks that are all over the show. Just like you can clearly see this is Mrs. Thompson or Miss Thompson, and this is Lady Danbury. Like, you can distinguish those characters so well. So I really love that contrast. But I'm like, how often do we get lumped together in such a way? And so this is just such a nice twist of that sort of.
All the white people are lumped together, and you can't tell them apart.
I did not care who was who. I was like, oh, that's Benedict. Okay, so we're artists. Okay, boom, I'm following. Like, I was just riding the wave. I loved it, because I was too busy trying to catch all of Lady Danbury's slick ass lines. Like, she was just my favorite.
She was a total oracle, you know. Like, oh, I mean, she really exposition wise, I think she was even more informative than the Julie Andrews character, the Lady Whistledown character. Who, I mean, whatever you want to say, the show does a lot of heavy lifting through Lady Whistledown to explain what's kind of going on. You know, it's very the Our Town narrator off to the side of the stage. But anyway, I want to get into Phoebe Dynevor, though, who's playing Daphne Bridgerton. The show is really resting largely on her shoulders, together with Rhaige Jean Page. Kristen, is Phoebe holding this show up well as a character? Or is Daphne Bridgerton an interesting enough character?
I want to say, like, a soft yes, because...
Mm-hmm. Way to equivocate, Jesus.
Well, I have an explanation. Basically, she is...
the character. She is this character. You know, she's the character, the like the lead or the second lead of every Jane Austen novel, essentially.
That's right.
She was raised to be pretty. She was raised to marry a rich and powerful husband. That is her main job and purpose. She doesn't need to be anything else. She is sort of like Jane Bennett with a splash of Lizzie, because the thing about Daphne is that she is funny and she is smart and she is relatively canny when she is in a position where she knows what she's talking about. So in that sense, she does work as a lead for me because she's more than just the pretty face. That being said, she's still not the most interesting character in this show. But to that, I would say generally the leads of the show are not the most interesting character. So it's I'm true. Fine with it. She can, right. You can have it. She's great.
Who do you think is the most interesting character on the show?
I was going to say.
Because I agree Daphne's not, but I think Simon is definitely one of the more compelling characters, if not the most interesting
one. He loses me. We'll get into it with the spoilers, but their plot loses me. So, my lead.
It trailed off a little bit for me as well, so let's get into it.
Well, let's go around the horn with Daphne, and then we can get into Simon and Daphne.
I found her to be perfectly unoffensive. I think it wasn't a particularly splashy role, and I think that Phoebe really sort of nailed what she was given. I love when like a compliment like pretty is kind of used backhandedly. Like, right. I could just see someone being like, well, she's pretty, but, you know, like, because I was a little bit thrown with the premise of the first episode about her being the diamond. And I was like, is this a strategy? Like, is it because she would make the best wife in this society that requires, like, I don't know. And like Kristen said, I did find her to be very capable once she was actually given some agency. But they both gave me a very Bella and Edward, only slightly less stunning. Did vibe and I can't go that far
in that journey with you.
I don't know about that. You're gonna have to unpack it a little bit more for me.
I just meant that he's like this like sexy, mysterious, glamorous like stranger with a big bag of bullshit, and she's just sort of plain and pining.
Have a big bag of bullshit. That's accurate.
He definitely does. Inner child wounds all over the place.
On behalf of men everywhere that have big bags of bullshit, I mean, I'd like to say it makes us compelling characters, Will. And bite your tongue, sir. Ashley, what's your take on Daphne as a character and Phoebe's performance in her?
She's definitely the typical lead. You know, the Jane Austen tropes. I think she fits that mold really well. But I also like that there are these moments where her wit comes through, where different facets of her character come through. The actors and actresses that are portraying these characters are new to me particularly, because I didn't watch Gossip Girl. I don't really know. I really didn't watch a whole lot of different shows that these folks have been in. So I'm new to a lot of the actors. So when I saw her in this role, I was like, oh, okay. Like it hit the mark for me. Like it was enough for me. Not my favorite character. I really loved Eloise, but overall, I thought she did a fantastic job. Yeah.
Yeah, Eloise, played by Claudia Jesse. By far my favorite Bridgerton.
Oh, so fun.
I feel like the show started and the first two episodes especially kind of planted the seeds of a relationship between her and Penelope.
Thank you.
And then completely abandoned it. And it's a real missed opportunity. I mean,
I agree. Yes. I 100% agree.
Yeah,
if we're being honest, one of my favorite characters was Penelope because she was like the only one I recognized because I know Nicola Coughlan from Dairy Girls.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
I was like, oh, Penelope, and I was like, Eloise is like the awkward second daughter who doesn't want to get married. She's probably a lesbian, and she just not yet. And I was like, okay, I guess.
Penelope gives like this like little wave and a look to Eloise the first episode where their families are the families are like on the stairs facing each other kind of across a way, and I was like, oh shit, there was like chemistry there. They dropped it, and I think it was just genuine chemistry there. I think it was an interesting storyline that they didn't develop, and I gotta tell you, when she all of a sudden is pining for Colin and plotting against Marina, who she also seemed to be making a friendship with, I was like, what is happening here? This is not who I thought we were getting with Penelope.
So I made a joke to Kristen when I was on like the third episode, and I was like, because I don't entirely understand why the show's called Bridgerton, because that's the name of a family.
I was thinking that too. Wow. Yeah.
And so by like the second
so
or third,
many of them because.
But then it would be Bridgertons or something.
Because Mr. Like... Bridgerton never practiced Simon's pull-out method, ever.
Not once. Oh my god. I cracked up every time he threw himself off of her with the...
Oh, man.
I was like, my man, you're going to pull something.
It was comical.
It definitely was.
But you're pulling that sword out of that sheath real hard at the last second.
I made a joke to Kristen where I was like, the show should just be called Penelope because she's the best one. It's funny because I didn't get that at all between the two of them. I got real nervous when the Penelope and Marina stuff started to happen. And I thought the show did a pretty good job of navigating that because I think that they did a good enough job of prioritizing her feelings for Colin. And then because there's also the factor where it's like, well, I mean, she's right. She's deceiving this presumably good man who mm-hmm. Penelope is, like, and I mean, she has her reasons, but I thought they handled it well. And I think that even though there was tension between Penelope and Marina, as I recall, I don't remember feeling like Penelope was particularly hateful.
Yeah, it didn't feel hateful to me either.
No, I think, yeah, it was much more, I think Penelope, the way Penelope treats Marina vis-a-vis Colin is very similar to how Anthony treats Simon vis-a-vis Daphne, where you're my friend, but you're not good enough for this other person that I care deeply for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. If we're taking Anthony kind of at his word, I think that's Anthony's objection to Simon. I like you, you're my best friend, you've been my best friend for a long time, but you're not good enough for my sister.
That's fair.
I also couldn't get a read on Penelope because Nicola's 32, but it's
no
like
way.
She could have been 12 or 13 for all I know watching right. the show. And so it was like, I think her age also factors into her behavior.
Wait, wow.
She is 33 years old. That is insane to me.
Wow.
I'm glad you said that, though, Will, because I'm 42 and a half years old. I've got a 12-year-old son, you know, who's presumably not much younger than these characters are in this book, or at least the ladies are in this book. And I'm watching Phoebe go through the sex scenes and the sexual awakening and stuff, and she looks so young. And I looked up Phoebe's real age, the actress's real age, like three times during the series. I was like, she looks too young. And she's like 25 years old. But wow. Yeah, for what Daphne was going through, I was like, how old is this actress playing her? And, you know, I don't know. It made me very uncomfortable as someone who has a kid watching this on screen, watching mm-hmm. it with a kid who's not much younger than what their presumed ages are. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I want to stay with Marina for a second because for me, Marina is the character who had the most wasted potential. I feel like Ruby Barker does a great job as her, but I feel like they kind of fizzled out with her storyline in a lot of ways. Ashley, what do you think about Marina? Did they make good use of her? Would you have liked to see more or see less?
I definitely wanted to see more of her. I was disappointed with her storyline overall. I didn't like the whole she's pregnant and tucked away. It was very disappointing to me. The whole attempted abortion tea, like, I don't know. I'm so torn. When she first arrives, I'm hopeful because she sort of, it's like a plot twist after we have, you know, the diamond of the first waters with mm-hmm. Daphne, you know, and then she arrives on the scene and she becomes the, what's the word that they use?
Oh God, I just had it. The incomparable?
The incomparable, right. Yeah. The incomparable. And so that role tends to flip-flop. I don't know. I don't know what I wanted, but I wanted more. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
It's a very Cinderella plot, the entire Featherington, that whole mm-hmm. thing.
Yes.
Without spoiling it, I don't prefer the ending. I wish they went the other direction with the end of her story.
Mm-hmm.
It was more nuanced.
Yeah, at the beginning, I started to want Marina with Simon, actually. I kind of wanted to see them together. I wanted that to be a thing. I wasn't sure yet about what Daphne's character would turn out to be like. Like, if she turns out to be this really shallow, sort of wispy character, and then, you know, Simon realizes that Marina's like his one true love. I don't know. I was making it all up in my head at first. This was episode one. You know, right. You know, I'm just dreaming up all these different scenarios, and I wanted to see black love on screen. I'm gonna be real. I wanted to see the black love. I don't mind interracial relationships, but that is just like an ideal kind of beautiful thing that I was hoping for, I guess, in the beginning. But yeah, what do you think, Will? Go for it.
At first I was like, I just liked it. It's only now that we're talking about it that I'm kind of like, I guess it was a little bit underdeveloped. And yeah. Furthermore, you know, presumably this Correct. Has been a big hit. We're going to have...
It's a classic story, though, I think a lot of shows run into, where they have a great idea for a character. They start off great. They introduce it. And then they just don't know where to go to it. That's when people get married off and disappear before the end of the series, or they get killed, or whatever. It's because, fuck, we don't know what to do with this, you know?
Because for me, her story served Polly Walker's Portia. It served Mrs. Featherington mm-hmm. more than it served Maria.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it made Portia interesting to me, so...
Well, that's interesting, because for me... Simon is what makes Daphne interesting. The only time mm-hmm. I find her tolerable and interesting is when Simon is on the screen, and I think that's troubling. And I want to get to the Jane Austen of it all, and whether or not this is a good message that we should have in 2021. Now I can officially say 2021. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a problem that this female lead of this show was only interesting when the guy was on the screen to kind of make her interesting, to educate her in sex, to show her the ways of the world. People often write about Jane Austen that it's a kind of a version of feminism, right, within the Victorian age or the Regency age. The right. idea of, you know, fierce female characters who were also, though, largely stuck in the societal roles that they had to live. Now, Jane Austen lived, though, basically during that time. So I think it's one thing for her novels to be reflective of that time. I think it's a little harmful to be showing young women these same kind of roles in 2021, though. I didn't like that none of the female characters in the show understood sex, understood how a baby was conceived. And I get it's historically accurate, but we're already mm-hmm. saying that not everything in the show is historically accurate. So right. I think I would have liked to seen a little more knowledge and Simon not commanding her to touch herself at night. You're telling me a woman of 19, 20 years old her hands haven't wandered down into her genitals at some point during her puberty?
I mean,
are we ignoring that puberty has never happened? Even by accident, even riding a horse, she didn't have some kind of experience where it was like, oh, that felt good. I think it's a harmful message to send to 2021 for people who are going to be influenced by this.
That, to me, is a criticism of the society, which I will admit the show did not depict the society quite that rigid. But as far as, like, a young person exploring their body, I mean, if you're raised with shame, then yes, you will not. You know what I mean?
Oh, it sure.
Also, not for nothing, Violet Bridgerton was not good at explaining things. Like, she did a bad job on Daphne's wedding day.
Big time.
I 100% agree, but I'm saying, though, Chris Van Dusen and his writer's room making this show could have done it differently.
I mean, I think part of that, and, you know, since none of us have read the book, we can't say if this is accurate to the book or not, but at the same time, I think harmful is maybe going a little too far, but that also could be because I'm a 35-year-old woman and I know about sex and I'm just watching this for, like, silly fun over my Christmas vacation. So if there are teen girls watching this show, then, I mean, I could maybe go as far as harmful, but I didn't find it necessarily harmful. I more found it just sort of like a, oh my God, yeah, what a quirk of, like, high society and, you know, those times. But what I actually have seen on the internet is that that is not historically accurate. She would have known stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, would have known stuff at the time.
I get to say nothing of the fact that I feel like her one giant moment of real agency that she exercises over herself is essentially a form of rape, at least a questionable decision. That's the one time she really asserts herself in this world. One of the few times, anyway. I don't know. I found the whole construction of the relationship a bit toxic, a little a little harmful for this day and age.
It's a little toxic. I will definitely
say it's a little toxic.
Bella and Edward.
For sure. Well, yeah. Sure.
Oh, wow. It hit me. Okay. All right.
Will brought it full circle.
He did. I'm good at that.
He is good at that, I see.
I think it's definitely a little toxic, but at the same time, I don't want to generalize, but it's a little bit of like a hallmark of the genre. You know, the man is always brooding and dark and mysterious, and he's, you know, pushing her away until he realizes he really loves her. And then they have like explosive sex because she's never been touched by a man before. And it's just blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I get it. I agree that it's not like amazingly good for female empowerment. But at the same time, I think Daphne expresses enough emotional agency during the course of the show that she doesn't need to express so much physical agency in this relationship where she is less experienced. So I still think that between her and Eloise and Penelope and the Queen and Lady Danbury, I think that there's enough positive female role models in this show that the semi-questionable sexual relationship between Daphne and Simon is not as harmful as it could be, like it is in Twilight.
Yeah, it's a Regency romance. What is a Regency romance without a hot, rakish duke? I mean, it's like, you know, like that is characteristically...
You have to have Mr. Wickham. You have to have
Mr. Wickham. And so I was, you know, when it came down to those two characters and their dynamic, I agree with you, Mike, on the fact that, you know, without Simon, where's Daphne? And she sort of disappears into him at certain points. So I definitely, for the most part, suspended my need for anything that wasn't genre specific. Like if it didn't fit the genre, but I know that this is a little toxic, you know, but at the same time, it's a Regency romance. So let's enjoy it for the genre. And so that's kind of what I went into it with.
And it's also TVMA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, big time. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Kristen and I have a refrain that we say all the time when we're critiquing shows, especially if they're kind of being put through the ringer on social media and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And we say that one thing cannot be all things to all people.
100%.
Like, correct.
Yeah, right. Well, I think for sure you have to, everyone's going to get something differently out of every show. And this is a show that's pushing boundaries. And, you know, if you talk to Shonda Rhimes, I'm sure it's part of the attraction of going to Netflix is more creative freedom to push the boundaries, you know, to not have to do a Grey's Anatomy again, but she can be involved in and spearhead projects where you have TVMA, where you have, you know, the little warnings that always make me laugh on Netflix shows, like murder, death, sex, smoking. Smoking is always one of the, it's so funny. It's like one of like the deadly sins. Like, and I think smoking is disgusting and gross, but it's like, you know, mutilation, cannibalism, smoking. It's like, you know, like their TVMA kind of warnings.
Which actually on that note, you know, there's the episode kind of in the middle where they're in the honeymoon phase and they can't stop banging it out.
Boom.
I found most of the content to be tasteful and rather earned. It was not gratuitous nudity.
No.
There was
little
to no violence. The language, what did they say? Fuck, like four times? Like, it was very tasteful, I found it to be. And, I mean, maybe that's what happens when you have a woman in charge of something. Right. But
I think that's a perfect segue, Will, because I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice. And I think we're getting to the end of the initial first half of this discussion. We have to talk about the sex in the show. If you follow Kristen's Twitter handle, or the So I'm Watching the Show Twitter handle, I don't know that I've ever seen her say horny more on social media than she did while she was binge watching and tweeting about the show.
Look, you're welcome for blessing your timeline. I don't know what else to say.
I'm hilarious. Girl, I'm not saying that. I'm complaining. I'm just saying. I was like, I like horny stuff. Let's see what this is. Honestly, that's why I'm watching it, you know? I think everyone agrees this show is horny, but is the sex done in a way that's interesting to you as a woman? Is the sex done and the romance done in the show in a way that is interesting narratively?
I have to say yes. I think so. I like the very sort of lusty, intimate moments between the two, that the heat as they, like, before they even get into the marriage bed. I think that was very intense, and it was satisfying on screen. I enjoyed those moments. As far as I'm concerned, it was definitely, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Two hands on the table, head thrown back. Yes. So
is it Rege or Rege, Jean Page?
I think I was saying Rege.
I just, he was very aesthetically pleasing. And so
he is a tall drink of water if ever there was one.
His sweat, is he a ballet dancer? I thought someone said something about him being a dancer.
I'll allow it.
He's certainly flexible.
He has this walk and just his swag was just out of it was out of this world. So,
when he rode onto screen in the first episode, I went, oh my god.
We're gonna need a minute here.
I'm gonna let that resonate. That was beautiful.
Oh my god, that's so funny. All right, Kristen, I'm kicking it to you.
So I will say that the romance was 100% satisfying for me.
Correct. Yeah.
I have zero complaints about the romance. When they touched hands in the art gallery, I was like heavy breathing in my own house. My husband came out of his office and he was like, how's your show, babe? And I was like, oh my god, their hands touched in the art gallery. And he literally looked at me and goes, isn't there legit fucking on this show? And I was like, the drama of it. It's just like, but what I will say is,
go away, Will, you don't understand.
Just leave.
The build up.
I was like, but the sex was honestly slightly disappointing for me. Mm-hmm. Not the amount of it. There was a lot of sex, and that was fine, right. And that was good and fun. The main issue for me is that it didn't look like it was good for Daphne. She was making all the right noises and stuff, but he was really just like letting her tiny white vagina have it. And I just think it didn't feel good for her. And then, like we discussed earlier, he was just then like totally pulling out super hard. I just my whole body sort of clenched up every time they did it. And that was not as much fun for me.
I don't envy the cleaning staff in his palace who had to change the sheets constantly.
Listen.
Yeah.
I mean, he was leaving donations to the bank all over the place, anywhere but inside of her.
He surely was.
Just like in his, randomly in his office, his poor butler or body man or whatever, just being like, oh God, another handkerchief. ugh.
Damn.
All right, well, does it work for you? Were you sitting, obviously you talked about watching, Ms. Page come on the screen and needing a moment to collect yourself.
I found it to be fine. The one that...
The heterosex was perfectly fine.
I'm gonna gay up talking about heterosexual sex here. The one that stood out for me was in the gazebo under the rain where she had that corset bra on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Was completely pantsless. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And sex in movies is really, really strange because obviously we want this. I mean, at least I do. I want to be entertained and titillated mm-hmm. by my shows. However, sex itself requires a great deal of time. Good sex, at least. It requires cooperation. And you reach a point where it's like, if these scenes go longer than 5 seconds, it does feel gratuitous. And so you mm-hmm. tend to just sort of get actors kind of just like smashing their bodies together.
That is fair. That is fair.
And then that's just true. Kind of like, because it's like, I don't exactly know. And that I tend to prefer slightly more heightened, hence the gazebo under the rain, all that. Because it gives us other things to look at and focus on. And for whatever reason, anytime this topic comes up, I say one of my favorite sex scenes was actually 300 with Lena Headey and Gerard Butler. Because it's sort of, it's stylized and it's a little bit slow motion. And it just sort of, I don't know.
Also, I just feel like King Leonidas helped. I think he just was touching her first as opposed to just sticking it in there.
Let's get it. Right.
I feel like there was, even the first time they had sex, there was so little foreplay. I was like,
she is absolutely
such a tall man. I'm sure you're packing a punch down there. She is not ready for you.
If you look at my personal Twitter, I put a comment up there. Find yourself a woman that looks at you the way Daphne's looking at Simon the first time he drops his pants. Yeah. I mean, it's as if a python had just entered the room and she did not know what to do with it. She is that's gonna go where?
Several times. Yeah, Kristen. No, I agree with you. I found myself thinking several times, is she even wet? Like, how do you even, you haven't even got it, you know, like, so you, when you said that, I was like, okay, that definitely resonated because I found myself having to suspend the notion that there needed to be foreplay, but yeah, there was very little foreplay.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
Thank you. Because this is one of the couple things though, I'm separating out the romance and the tension, the sexual tension, which I think the show actually does really well. Kristen, I'm with you. This show does the hands touching, you know, curling at the side of each other in a prohibited kind of way. The sex itself, though, not just between Simon and Daphne, but all of the sex in the show, the brothel scene, the orgy scene, it's so much written by a guy who has heard about sex, is horny at the idea of sex, but has never actually had sex. If you watch the show again, and especially if you're watching with like the closed captioning on, it's all moaning and grunting, and motherfuckers haven't even touched each other yet. They've got women basically coming in this show constantly. There's not a dick anywhere near them, and they're like, he hasn't even undone. What are you moaning about? That's like I fucking to the next level in this show, and it was driving me crazy. I was like, have you ever touched a woman? What are you doing?
Lot of tremulously exhaling. There was a lot of that particular captain.
Moaning and grunting were by far the biggest things. There's a scene. It's I think one of the orgy scenes where, you know, when he goes, I think, is it fucking
to
Benedict?
His painter friend's house?
Yeah. Benedict. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman, and the guy is like, there's like 6 inches of space between them. He's barely even touching her shoulder, and her eyes are rolled back in her head. she just got done by a Sibian. Like, fucking, like, just run and plowed through the field. To say nothing of the wetness and the roughness and the pulling out and stuff. It's very anticlimactic sex for me, mostly. That being said, well, when we get into the spoiler portion, there are a couple of good standout sex scenes in the show. But largely, I wrote my notes and I described this to everyone. It's very, a lot of smoke and very little fire for me. Are you guys Shonda Rhimes show fans? Scandal, Grace?
Only Grace.
I loved the first season of How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I forgot about that one. I watched religiously the first like 2.5 seasons of Grey's Anatomy in college with my roommates. And then previously I've made it to season 6 and I watched almost all of Scandal. I think a lot of her shows have a lot of issues and I don't necessarily think that's her fault because I think the first 2 seasons of Grey's Anatomy are some of the most exceptional network television that's been made in the last 20 years. But I do think there are issues that arise. I think this show has issues, but I think it generally steers clear of the issues the other shows had, where they kind of go off the rails at a certain point. And this has not had the time to do that yet. And it was relatively well plotted.
I was just gonna stay more to the heat aspect of it, and Scandal is the show. The Scandal is the show I'm thinking of in particular, and it may have something to do very much specifically because of Kerry Washington is who she is and is a very dynamic, very sexy, vivacious actress. But Scandal's sex scenes, and there are plenty of them. This is a network show airing on ABC at 9, 10 o'clock at night. I would have to go be by myself for a little bit after watching some of the shows in Scandal. I was eating like sandwich, like cheese and ham sandwiches and like drinking coffee while watching this and never really got emotionally moved at all watching this. Scandal would get me going like a race car constantly. And I think that's the difference because you have Shonda has real feel for heat and passion that I found generally lacking here. Go watch yourself some Scandal on Fast Forward and damn.
That's the thing is like, I can't really, because of all of the, even with the TVMA on this, I can't really get that involved in TV or movie sex scenes because generally they are short. There is no foreplay and it's like, it's nothing. Like, it's usually a nice culmination of whatever character moments we're having. But for me, it's not the type of thing that where I like watch a TV or movie sex scene and I'm like, all right, let's go to bed right now. That's just not.
No, I don't get that enough.
There were a couple in Black Sails that you were intrigued by.
Okay, well, that's because Charles Vane.
Wow, look at you putting out her laundry on the line here for all of us to watch.
This is not dirty laundry. I will share it with the world. It's because of Zach McGowan specifically.
Tell it, girl. Tell it. Black Sails. Is Black Sails in Shondaland?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was sexy, but I'm like, wait, I didn't catch that. I thought I didn't, you know. Kerry Washington, I'm not a huge Kerry Washington fan. She kind of irritates me on screen, but.
Really?
There's a lot of reasons for that.
Well, she got a real trembly lip. Lip is a whole character in all of the things that she's in.
She tends to do, ever since Scandal, I feel like that's her face all the time. Yes. Like the Olivia Pope is like, it's etched in my memory and my mind. And so like, I only watched maybe two or three seasons of Scandal and I scrapped it because I got sick of that drama and all of the constant like dialogue. So that's what it is for me.
I couldn't put my finger on it when I was watching Little Fires Everywhere and I couldn't finish it because I was like, I'm not into this.
I didn't even start Little Fires Everywhere. I saw Kerry Washington and I said, yeet. Nope, I just can't do it.
Bless you for explaining that, because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Little Fires Everywhere, another podcast covered by Pod Clubhouse.
Right. So, but yeah, so I didn't really care.
Ashley, I'm telling you, though, go find some Kerry Washington, Scott Foley YouTube clips.
And, I'm glad you said Scott Foley, because I can't take her with Tony Goldwyn.
Oh, no. No one should be fucking Tony Goldwyn.
It's got to be Scott.
I'm sure he's a fine guy.
Will did not like that. Will is triggered.
I find Tony Goldwyn is very sexually inert for me. Anyway, but Scott Foley, though, and Kerry Washington.
Okay, well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that. But yeah, in terms of this being a Shondaland situation, Grey's Anatomy is my... first of all, Kristen, in contrast to you, I am caught up on Grey's. I think I'm like one episode shy where I need to watch the latest one, but I love Grey's Anatomy. I just love the character development. I enjoy following the characters. And so that part of Shondaland is, you know, something that I think is cool. And so when I started watching Bridgerton, I'm like, okay, well, she's pretty good. I wasn't really like banking on it being anything more than just a fun period drama to get into. So
yeah.
But the heat factor, eh.
For me anyway, at the end of the day, I think the show suffered from execution. I think it took you to the edge really well and then just didn't push you over the edge really well. Which, you know, with a TVMA, again, and I'm talking about Scandal more just as an example of what a show is able to do, even within the confines of network standards and practices. You're going to hear me talk in the wrap up in a few minutes about Dickinson. Dickinson is a show that emotionally compels me a thousand times more than Bridgerton. And if you need your Victorian era / Regency era story, go get yourself some Dickerson. It's fucking fantastic. Season 2 is about to drop in a week and I cannot wait. I had the screeners. I'm very excited.
I thought I was the only one who watched that show.
Dickinson.
Dickinson. Yeah, it's Emily Dickinson's story. Great, fantastic story. Huge. The music, which I want to get to here, is great. The story is great. Haley Steinfeld is great. Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Worth it.
Yes. Yes. Haley Steinfeld. Let's go. Okay. Yeah,
let's all go. Right. Indeed. Will, you and I will talk about Dickinson. It's fantastic. last thing before we go to the roundtable, the music has been a very popular hit with a lot of people. Even if you didn't like the show necessarily, I feel like a lot of people have taken to Chris Bauer's scoring of the show and the string orchestra. I think, what is it? Vitamin Quartet doing kind of the modern pop, the pop songs done with, you know, via quartet. Was the music a big part of your enjoyment of the show? Will, how about you?
Yeah, love it. Next question. the thank you next. I almost blacked out. It was so funny to me.
It was gorgeous. Loved it.
For me, it was really Taylor Swift's Wildest Dreams to the montage of Simon and Daphne just plowing each other all across the estate.
Yeah.
That was really that. First of all, that's like in my top five Taylor Swift songs ever. And then I love the Vitamin String Quartet. I walked down the aisle to the Vitamin String Quartet.
Whoa.
It is so good. I
actually expected more.
I wanted more.
I wanted more.
They only have like four or five, and I wish there would have been like two to 17 per episode.
you can actually go get the Vitamin String Quartet songs as well as the original music, Chris Bauer songs, actually on Spotify. And there's actually a great playlist that has both of them bushed together. And it's actually totally great listening. It's great working music. I was actually writing the other day, listening to that on background. It's actually pretty well done. Because Chris Bauer's with the original score actually kept the idea of using modern sounding ballads, but composed for orchestra, for strings, and so it was original composition, but it had the same feel as the covers, as the, you know, the Wildest Dreams stuff, which also was my favorite too. Mm-hmm. This is the part of the show where we go around and we talk about whether or not we loved it or we're gonna leave it, and quickly why. Ashley, I'm gonna start with you. Bridgerton, love it or leave it?
I love it. Gives us an opportunity to imagine the world in a different way. Beautiful characters, beautiful colors. Go for it.
Love it. And I'm going to go real superficial here. This was a gorgeous production. Mm-hmm. I could not get over. I have no idea how much money they threw at this thing. Everything was massive. And one of my biggest pet peeves is when you have like a queen character, especially like a fantasy queen or something, and she wears like two dresses. And it's like, nope. Like, every character had a different dress, had a different wig, like, the rooms, the paintings, the digital vistas, the hair is standing up on my arms. I was enthralled by what a massive... I love when a story actually gets the time and the budget it needs to be what it needs to be.
And Netflix, you know, can be very hot or cold with its production value.
Yes.
And this is definitely on the high end for them. I 100% agree with you. I think it's one of the standout parts of the show is how it looks and how lavish it feels, you know.
One of my biggest pet peeves that is so specific to me is I hate, especially when it's like a close-up or like a hero item or something, and a character is holding an obviously cheaply made fake flower, and when he handed her a real rose, I was like, I'm good.
Kristen, love it or leave it, and why?
Yeah, I totally loved it. First of all, it delivered exactly what it said it was going to, which is Regency era Gossip Girl. That's all I wanted. They did it. I was super, super into it. I loved pretty much all the casting. I think if you are looking for a silly, sort of frothy, with slightly high stakes Regency era drama comedy kind of thing, this is what you need to watch. I loved it. Even with my issues, I loved every minute of it.
I think there's better things on TV that you could be watching right now. There's better things on Netflix you could be watching right now. I think if you need this itch scratched, I would say go watch Dickinson. I think it does what this show does, but does it 1,000 times better. If Gossip Girl and, say, Downton Abbey had a baby, it would kind of maybe look like this, maybe. I'm going to leave it. Unless you've watched every other fucking thing that's out right now. But seriously, go watch Dickinson, and I think you're going to enjoy the ride much better.
I didn't know I was on a Dickinson episode, Mike.
Well, with the new season coming up, they're paying me to plug the show. So I have been bought and sold by Apple TV Plus. Guys, that brings us to the end of the strict non-spoilery portion, though I think maybe you did a couple spoilers, of the show. So if you don't want to hear any more about Bridgerton, turn off this episode now. But if you want to hear some more specifics about specific things, scenes that we really liked, well, stay tuned, because we're about to start our spoil section. All right, guys, who's got something that they want to talk about specific that happened in the show that you feel like you need to get off your chest? Kristen, what stands out to you as something you want to talk about?
I just kind of want to talk about what Simon is thinking. Like, constantly. That was absolute dumbest part of this show to me. The dumbest part. His whole, I can never marry and I can never father a child. And then, like, when you finally find out why, it is so stupid.
I was like, your dad is dead, dude. You've already won.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a character, especially a male character, more in need of daddy issue therapy in my life than Simon. 100%. For sure. Yeah. And listen, I don't have a relationship with my father. I'm not nearly as fucked up as he is, though. I still had a kid, you know.
Yeah, so. Well, that's
the thing.
Because, well, I was going to say, furthermore, how are you then taken in and raised by Lady Danbury? And she didn't fix or riddle out at least half of what this problem was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is something that is worth probably talking about a little bit, that Lady Danbury was able to fix so much of him, but never addressed this won't marry, won't sire children kind of thing. Ashley, what's your take on Simon and his motivations?
I looked at it through a lens of blackness and seeing a black man struggle with his inner child wounds and his father issues and also his speech impediment. That was beautiful to me, how a black woman came into his life and was like, no, you can and you will. Yeah. And that really was beautiful to me. But then for him to still sort of, you know, avoid Daphne's love. And and I really, that really resonated for me in terms of what it means to address your childhood trauma as a black man or as a black person. And so I don't know what that's like. I'm not a black man, obviously, but I was very like cognizant of that and sympathetic and really like, aw, you know, kind of, it really made him a more, to me, it really just kind of awakened like my tenderness towards him as a character. You know, that was kind of how I looked at it.
I will agree with you on that point. I did, especially in the flashback scenes, I definitely was like, man, this dad's a dick. Yeah. This kid doesn't deserve that. Right. But the way he manifested it in his adult life was what really frustrated me.
Well, yeah, right. And I think that's
like, come on, man.
It's fair to say it's frustrating to watch it play out, but emotional wounds inflicted when you're a kid, often, especially, I mean, again, I carry around a ton of baggage that informs so much of how I live my life because of my relationship with my father from when I was a kid. Everything I do as a parent is informed by the issues and trauma I had as a kid growing up with my father. So sure. I get that, but I agree with you. It's frustrating. You know, Will said it best, like, you already won, man. You beat him. You outlived him. And look at you. Look at the fucking
change your name.
Look at the specimen you have become, you know, with Lady Danbury's help and great genes. Like, you've won, my man. You have won. Do we have a problem with Simon saying, I can't marry children versus I won't? Is Daphne right to be upset about that? Is that semantics or is it semantics?
She is correct to be angry. I don't condone how she physically handles that. But right. I think he lied. He said, I can't give you children. That is incorrect. That implies to someone,
certainly given her ignorance.
Especially given her
ignorance,
that implies a physical impediment to impregnating her, when in reality, he has manifested this mental block where he just refuses. And that's a whole different scenario.
You could see from his point of view, right? And right, every story has two sides, right? So from his point of view, it very much is can't because of how internalized his vow, his deathbed vow to his father is. It is can't for him, even if it's not biologically can't, you know, for him it is. But you could see from her point of view where she finally where she finally understands how all the plumbing works and then all the parts go where. And then she's like, oh, no, it's won't, not can't. Yeah, so... Do you guys have an issue with the what some people, I mean, one of the biggest criticisms for the show is this people are calling set issue scene or rape scene where she refuses to let him pull out of her again and mounts him to keep him inside, to make him come inside of her. Is that an issue?
I don't like the way she went about it at all. I really dislike when characters, when there is clear lack of communication, and things could be so much easier if one thing is said. If there's like one thing that's separating, and there's this whole, there's like 2-3 episodes where all they have to do is say this one thing and all of this shit would be cleared up. And that is the issue that I have with Daphne and Simon's little tiff that they have over him and the word choice of like, I can't versus I won't, you know? And so I don't know. I don't like how she went about it. I think that could have been a lot more nuanced, a lot more sophisticated in the writing. I thought it was trash how they just kind of avoided each other. Like, this is so dumb. Like, what are we doing? And that was my thoughts. You know, those were my thoughts.
And I guess it's a scene from the book, but I guess the book is also like 20 years old at this point now.
Right. Okay.
People who were fans of the books who are crying foul about it being included in the show. Well, I think the point that I've read anyway is that it was maybe troubling 20 years ago, but now in 2020, 2021, you didn't need to include this. There was enough going on in the show. You could have shown her sexual education, because I think that's how the show is depicting it, as part of her sexual maturity, the her taking more agency over her life. I think that's how the show depicts it.
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that.
I don't know that I do either, and I think the show could have done it in a different way. I think she's literally holding him down. She wants to force the issue here because of what she has found out about him.
So what I want to say is that when I watched this, I watched most of the show twice. The first time that I watched that episode, I didn't consider it a rape scene, and then I saw something later that said it, and I was like, I mean, it was definitely shady, but then watching it again, I was like, yeah, I mean, she is being very aggressive in this moment, and Ashley's right, all that it would have taken is, why have you been lying to me and not having right. full sex with me? Like, why? Right. What is the reason for this? And instead, she was like, well, I'm gonna force you to have this conversation with me after doing something terrible to, like, prove that right. you are the wrong one. Well, yeah, and it is manipulative, and that yeah. it's the type mm-hmm. of thing where I definitely think they're both wrong in the situation, but sure. it is sort of... it is taking a physical act away from him. So mm-hmm. I think it's definitely worth the conversation.
Which the show doesn't really have.
Yeah, and then the show doesn't talk about it.
It really moves past it really fast. I mean, they talk about the fallout of it because it launches into the entire pregnancy storyline. But the act of how she went about it, the show never addresses, which is a failing on the show's part. Because I think, and correct me if you guys think I'm wrong, had it been Simon on top of her holding and forcing himself to completion inside of her, people would be going fucking ballistic that mm-hmm. that was being the you know, depicted on screen TV.
It's obviously true. Yes. The only other thing I would say is this would not have been a conversation that took place in Regency times. That he wouldn't have been like, you maritally raped me.
And it's the kind of thing that the show kind of skirted the line where it was like sometimes it leaned into, especially with society, it leaned into the expectations of the time. Mm-hmm. And then other times it hand waved them away with a very progressive agenda.
Yeah.
And so for me, I mean, I was invested in their interpersonal issues. So when I was watching the scene, I was like kind of on her side. Basically, the balance of power is all over the place in that scene. Yeah. And so that makes it hard for me to be like, this is a very cut and dry example of, because he also doesn't say no, he says wait, even mm-hmm. though yeah. she knows, or at least she assumes, because mm-hmm. if anything, I think she's angry because I think she thinks she's been taken for a fool.
Right.
Yes.
And so I'm the kind of person, I think nothing is off limits when it comes to storytelling. However, I think if you introduce an element, you are absolutely bringing the story to a different level. And yeah. I don't love when people throw in elements, you know, very taboo elements, and then sort of just pretend or don't even address them. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's where it feels gross.
Well, it feels gratuitous then at that point, because mm-hmm. you didn't do it. Well, you did it for shock value over trying to have a conversation about a thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think you hit the nail on the head that I struggled in the first part of the show to verbalize. I think the show does a lot of wanting to have its cake and eat it too, where sometimes it bends towards what the actual society norms were, and then in other ways it breaks it and imagines this other world where things aren't as they actually were, which I found. I think maybe is putting a finger on a thing that annoyed me about the show a little bit. But I also agree with you, though, that it is a moment for her where you know she's angry, you know she's learned that she's being lied to. So there is kind of a knee-jerk reaction to be like, yeah, you know.
And also hurt. I mean, I think she wants to hurt him in that moment.
Right, she wants to hurt him, right? She wants to make yeah. him feel uncomfortable. It's not cool that they just kind of dropped it without any kind of further discussion.
So. Or they just don't have the discussion. They just yeah. pout for 2 weeks.
They should have spoken about it sooner. They should know he is very rigid in his moral code and what he thinks is wrong and right in his own internal life and everything. And I just think that scene specifically and their issues as a married couple are not black and white. You cannot just say he is right and she is wrong. Mm-hmm. I think right. they're both right and they're both wrong. And mm-hmm. he lied to her and she went about revenge in a poor way. It's just, definitely. You can't, because the thing I saw about it was like, this is disgusting. This whole show is trash because of this one scene. And I'm like, wait a minute. You need to have the discussion about it. You absolutely need to talk about it. It can't, you cannot throw this whole show away because of one problematic thing that happened. The point of it is that it is problematic on both sides. Like, they have both done a problematic thing.
I think you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater if you write off the entire show because it's not a recurring theme also, right? And that's point. Right. That's I think that's what the show is trying to say. This is her peaking in her education, in her awareness. Mm-hmm. If she had been like this the entirety of the show, well, we wouldn't be talking about Bridgerton the same way that we are talking about it.
Exactly, you know? Because we know, based on all of the episodes that came before and the ones that come after, Daphne is not necessarily a manipulative character. She is relatively innocent, and she really is kind of hard on her sleeve type of thing. And in relation to what you just said, I totally agree that if this had been an ongoing theme in the show, like if Sienna the opera singer was just getting manhandled after every aria, that, you know, then we have come to a problematic place. But this was an interpersonal thing that happened between this married couple. It's a lot more nuanced than she raped him. I don't think don't think we can leave it at that.
I can't agree more.
Because if we had to distill it down to a yes or no, then yes. But I think that there's so much. It's like I said when I mentioned the balance of power is all over the place. Because I also found it fascinating that in that moment their entire dynamic flipped, where she was the aggressor and he was. Oh, I lost the word. I had a word.
Like submissive?
Sure, that works. I had a better word that I just completely went out of my head. But it was like, it was interesting to see that, like, because she was behaving in sort of a masculine way. And I feel like that was a culmination of more than just.
Is he a victim, though? Right? Because none of us have used the word victim.
I think he's a victim of many other things before he is a victim of Daphne. Yeah. He is a victim of the circumstance of his upbringing and not having a mother and having a terribly abusive father. Those things make him more of a victim than anything that Daphne does to him.
I think he's a victim of having two well-defined ab muscles. That's what I think.
I was like, I've said my piece. We can navigate away from this.
You're going to tell your friend, watch this show, the scene that you're going to use to explain why you should watch the show. Whatever stands out as part of your big elevator pitch about why you should watch the show.
The hands touching in the art gallery. That's it for me. Mm-hmm. If I'm telling somebody to watch this show, that is the distillation of the reason why I love this show. The like Regency drama of it all, especially before they actually end up, you know, married and having sex and everything. That's what this type of thing is for me. It's the longing glances. It's the brushing fingers. That's what I love about it. My actual favorite scene is a weird one, and it's kind of a deep cut. I loved the moment late in the finale when Marina has seemingly decided to take her George's brother's proposal. I hated the abortion tea. I thought that was just,
I thought it was wild that the show went so there dumb. I thought so it was dumb. I thought it was crazy so that the show dumb. Did it. Yeah,
I hated it.
For it. My actual favorite scene is when she and Polly Walker are speaking to each other, and she said, how did you have a loveless marriage for 22 years? And she said, you just take a bunch of little things and big things like your babies, and eventually they make up enough to have a decent life. That blew my mind, because there seems to be nothing terrible about Philip. He seems to be a genuinely nice man, and they don't love each other, but I think he's going to take care of her, and I think it'll be the type of thing where they grow to love each other. And I just love that was her answer, where she clearly didn't love her husband, but she was like, you know, we are what we are, and sometimes you have to do it. And then she said, you might even be stronger than me. I just thought that scene was really well acted between the two of them. For how over the top Polly Walker was for this entire show, that was a really nice nuanced moment for her.
I'm a huge Polly Walker fan, and she's frequently playing this role, which I think is easily a thankless role, because it's easy to just be like, oh, that's a villain. And I think that there's a lot more nuance there. And I think, plus every single thing she wore was amazing.
Amazing.
I kept waiting for what was with her hair. Was she like growing a unicorn horn or something? She kept fussing with her brain or with her bangs.
Oh, I don't know.
Did anybody else notice that tick?
No.
Okay, it was like she was trying to cover something up on her hairline or her head. It was weird to me.
Marina?
No.
No, Polly Walker, Portia.
Featherington.
Huh. No, I didn't catch that. Interesting.
This is patented. Patented me. I'm going to lose all three of you on this. I know it.
Oh, God.
How do we feel about Daphne completely screwing over Cressida?
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Completely.
Trash.
And because Cressida's kind of bitchy, it's okay. She deserved it. We know nothing about her. We don't know anything about her rich inner life. She even comes and thanks Daphne for allowing her to win this one time with the prince, who Daphne was not interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm Team Cressida. I'm Team Cressida with this.
Yeah, I was Team Cressida on that one. I felt like Cressida could have definitely came back at her with, you know, what she knew, but.
She threatened her, but...
She did. But I think as the show continues...
It almost seemed like a real character deviation for Daphne. Because it did. Yeah, it really doesn't seem like who Daphne was at all to act that way.
And also poor Prince Friedrich.
Poor Prince Friedrich.
She doesn't really do the girl against girl thing at all. So. Yeah.
So if this show continues, I want more Cressida. I want to know. And I mean, that is a dynamic as old as time, but they've earned it.
I didn't think Cressida was going to come up at all in this conversation. So
I'll find a way.
Listen, Will, I'm impressed.
You will find a way to bring up the bitchy blonde
and, you know,
with no provocation.
Will actually jogged my memory. I am ready, y'all. I'm ready.
Go for it.
Every single time I think about this show, I come back to my adoration for Eloise. I absolutely love her character. She is the unsung hero of this show. I love her tenacity for finding out who Lady Whistledown is. She could care less about high society and whatever is going on in that drama. She just wants to know who this woman is that is so dope and dynamic and can just say whatever the fuck she want to say. Like, I want to know. Put me on. And like, I love that we find out. I mean, we're in the spoiling section of the show,
go
right?
For it.
So like,
spoilers.
Listen, I picked up on Penn from like episode 5 or 6. I knew who it was. I was like, oh, boom, boom. Because if you think about her name is Penn, and that just kept resonating with me. And I'm like, that was a nice little, you know, a little pun there. So I just thought it was cool that, you know, they revealed that at the end. And I think it's going to manifest. I know we mentioned this earlier, but based on the way the show went, the show was about Daphne and Simon's love story. It wasn't about Eloise. Eloise is coming into her season, and I'm hopeful that through Lady Whistledown, she finds herself romantically engaging with Penn later on. You never know. So I'm thinking about season 2. Maybe that could be a thing. But I'm excited about that, and I love the interaction between Eloise and Penn, and I'm excited to see whether she finds out in a possible season 2. So that's what I loved Eloise.
Yeah. I think each book, right? Each book focuses on a different Bridgerton child. And I think there's 8 core books in the series.
Interesting.
So presumably we have gone through most of the Daphne Simon story, and a season 2 will focus on Colin or Benedict or Eloise would be my guess. So,
well, I will say, if you guys liked Eloise, then you will absolutely like Dickinson, because Eloise is diet Emily Dickinson.
Really good call. Probably why she was my favorite character in the show.
I'm loving that actress, so I'm going straight there when we're done.
Yeah, she's super cute. Had this one line delivery when she thinks that Lady Whistledown is the modiste, and the whole thing, she doesn't care about her dresses, she doesn't care about being girly. She doesn't care about any of it. And she comes in and she's like, I need a dress for Daphne's ball. And the modiste is like, you already have a dress for Daphne's ball. And she just goes, a lady can never have too many dresses. And she does this little giggle thing. It slayed me both times. She's just
so funny.
That delivery was like my top delivery of this whole show. It was so exceptional.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for coming and joining us, Ashley. We can't wait to see you on another series here at Pop Clubhouse.
Have fun with y'all today. Kristen, thank you for having me.
Kristen and Will, we have to have you back more frequently.
Sure.
Sure.
Where can people find you guys? Where should they follow you on social media?
On Twitter, we are at So I'm Watching, all one word, no caps or anything. And it's at So I'm Watching the Show on Instagram. Yeah, So I'm Watching the Show on YouTube.
I love that. I love that. Ashley, what shows have you done for Pod Clubhouse that you'd like people to go check out podcast-wise? I know you've done Lovecraft Country. What did you do before that?
I did Lovecraft Country. Hashtag, right? Hashtag Black AF. And I've done the Becoming documentary with Michelle Obama. That was beautiful. If you read the book, check out the documentary on Netflix.
Great series. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I am on, I'm really not much for Twitter, but I'm there at the first of Gwen. And I'm on Instagram as the_actual_Ashley.
Guys, thanks so much for coming out, hanging out with us the last hour and a half. I hope you got your fill of Bridgerton from us. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Pod Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you could leave us a 5-star review, that would be most helpful so that Penelope doesn't have to write nasty things to you about you as Lady Whistledown. So, to the bugger who left 1 star, go fuck yourself. So, all right, guys, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.